that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
I go to pull the tubing off of the hot end, and it wouldn't come off.
Bingo! Showtime!
While you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a Little Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are like a bat. For the show link, go to rectadlngs.org. And IC challenge at linuxtech.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1050 of the Linux Link Tech Show tonight. It appears that it's just going to be Joel.
And Dan. Hello.
And yeah, and me. I don't know what happened to Joe. But Dave, like you said, his daughter had a gallbladder removed, so there we go. He'll be back next week. So I had a good experience last week, surprisingly, and a job I was not overly excited about, which was they offered a new deployment method to the VIP process that we have with our WordPress VIP that we use strictly for the Gutenberg editor. What it is this time is we take our WordPress site and we build it and archive it in our preferred archive method, be it tar or zip or tar bz or tar gzip, whatever, and you send it to them through their command line. And then they take it and containerize it and put it up there. I thought this was going to be a little more challenging than it actually turned out to be, which I'm kind of a little thankful for, because it made it went fairly smoothly. This is in beta, so the way that we were doing or our current process is a bit convoluted, but we have three different environments: development, staging, production, two pseudo environments, prototype, staging, and prototype, and everything was a separate branch in a repository. Our main branch was our development branch. And then the main branch, which is called main, the production branch, is tied to production. So we typically promote, you do development, then you move to staging, then you move to production. But our standard process for our other applications is that kind of the local environment and development are running off the same data and back-end infrastructure. Then the staging environment is a separate back-end infrastructure, and production is a third instance of a back-end infrastructure. So development and local development are kind of the same with regards to the data that can be used or consumed in there. Anyway, with the WordPress side of things, we wanted to get it closer in line with our containerized or all our other applications, which means that we work off the main branch, which when we merge a feature branch into through a pull request, it kicks off the process to either build and containerize the application or push the application code to Google Cloud build for functions. Actually, they both kind of push the Google Cloud build. One does functions, the other one does containerizing, builds a container. And then it gets auto-deployed out to development and staging environments with a manual push to production when we're ready. What it has afforded us to do is particularly with the containerized applications, is we build a container for every feature branch that gets merged in. That way, we have it creates a release and then the container, both based on the version that is auto incremented from. That will allow us to easily just tell on a deployment in production, deploy this version of the container. So with our WordPress stuff with VIP, we weren't able to do that. We had the three separate branches. So when we did development in our development branch, the process then had to be, we would cherry pick from that hash, that GitHub SHA, that hash, cherry pick only the changes that were made in that feature branch, would then be taken over to the staging environment for a pull request. And then you would also have to do that to the production environment. So when you merged in, it kicked off a script that would take that, check out that branch of the repository, development, staging, and production, and then build it, and then push it to a dash built branch, like development dash built or staging dash built or production dash built, and then it would be live. What would end up happening is that if there was a problem and we needed to roll back, it was fairly simple. I think we could do two or three rollbacks through the dashboard that they have. So what it does is once you push it to the built branch, they take that and they containerize that application, and then they deploy it into that environment. So you can go back like two or three versions of that containerized application. So now what we have done, what I had done was the process has changed in as much that what happens is we take when we're right when it gets merged in, I build it in a GitHub workflow, which is we have a script to do that, and then it runs a when you merge it in, it first bumps the version, so it pulls the version file, gets that number, increments it by one, and writes it back. And then once that's finished, we have to have a check in there to see if the last commit to the branch had that specific commit message that it says bumping version in it. So that if you don't do that, you're not careful, every time that you commit to that branch, it's going to bump the version. So the version bump, which is a commit back to the branch, would cause the version to bump again, and then you get into a circle. So you got to be really careful, because if you have a typo like I did the first time, you're sitting there scratching your head wondering what the hell's going on, and next thing you know, you've just incremented by like 75 versions in a few minutes, and that really screws stuff up. Especially if you're making tags off of that and then you end up with like 75 GitHub tags on your branch, and you got to go through and delete all this crap and clean it up. Anyway, it checks out that repo again and runs our script to build it, and then it runs a script to clean it up. From there, it then archives that whole thing, that whole directory structure, and then it pushes it up to it archives it by a name on it's just called story editor dash and then the version .zip, and I would prefer to have used tar.gz or tar.bzip, but every time I tried to use tar.gz, tar with gzip, their deployment application would complain about there being, it said it's not allowed to have symlinks in the archive. Which at first I'm like, there's no symlinks in here. It's the same, like zip works fine, but tar.gz doesn't. And it's the same thing, you know, it's the same code. It's the same directory structure I'm tarring up. I'm like, there shouldn't be any symlinks in here. In fact, I even ran a find command and a couple other commands to see if there were any symlinks in there, and it didn't find any. Interestingly enough, it should have found symlinks, because afterwards it realized when they were telling me, oh, yeah, we see some symlinks in there, because when you have a node, and this has like node code in it, and JavaScript and stuff, when you have, if you have node modules in there, when node modules are built, binaries in some of those libraries or whatever that you include, they get created, a symlink gets created to them from your node modules directory. In there, there's a dot bin, and then in that dot bin, there are symlinks to binaries in some of those libraries or modules that have been built. And so when you're using a package manager like NPM or whatever, that it knows to use that dot bin path when it's executing some stuff. So those are symlinks. I don't know why the find command didn't find them in there. Anyway, long story short, we just stuck with zip, because they had said like 3 or 4 times that it was fixed. I could never get it working, and I just wanted to move beyond that at that point, because I was more interested in finishing the process. So what it does is it zips it up, and it pushes it up to a Google storage bucket, because I can't really put it in Google Artifactory with where our containers and our function code goes. So it goes into a storage bucket. And then when it comes time to deploy it, like when you merge into the development branch, it creates that, builds it, pushes it up to Google storage bucket. Then it auto deploys it to the development and staging environments. So that is just, it pulls it down, a separate workflow that pulls it down the version that you had specified, and it then sends it off to the VIP CLI command line, which has an app deploy. So that archive gets sent to them. They take that archive, put it into where they need it, and build a container off it, and voila, it gets pushed to the live environment. So it works really well. I would say, ultimately, if you take into consideration the entire process that would go from development staging into production, we save a significant amount of time going to production, because we don't have to rebuild the entire application for production. Technically, we save time going to staging and production, because it's all using now that single archive that would go to development. And we haven't moved over the production side yet to this new method. It's just been on development and staging. And that's because since we had the 3 different branches, we wanted to start with development, make sure it was going to go right. Development and staging would be together. So now the next step is that we need to move this process over to the main branch, which is going to involve us. It's that switching it over should be fairly easy. The problem then is all the open pull all the open branches that were the feature branches that are open against development, right? They need now to be instead open against the main branch, and we need to stop using development, kind of like we stopped using staging. So that's going to be a little, I think, maybe a little trickier to get all that stuff moved over. I don't think it should be that hard. It's just people need to take their code, their changes, and move it over. There's the files that they're doing instead of the stuff that, instead of it moving. Anyway, that's that. We'll cross that road hopefully soon. What I found out is that I started with like 130-140 megabyte archive, and then I was told that it doesn't need the node modules, any of the node modules in there, because the script that we run to build it compiles everything and you don't need to know modules anymore after that. And so that reduced it from like 130 or 40 or whatever it was down to like 17 megabytes in size for the archive. That was a significant bump. And me being still a Node novice, I was like, holy crap, we just saved like 80% size on this, like reduce it by 80%. I'm like, does that mean we don't need the Node modules directory for any of our applications because we build it? Because all our containerized applications are Next.js, and you build those applications. And then I was told, oh, we don't really need those. And I'm like, man, this sounds too good to be true. So this was on Friday, I think, of last week that I was like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take an application and I'm going to rebuild it and containerize it without the Node modules in there. And because the Node modules in some of these applications are like 700 megabytes in size, like over half a gig just for those libraries, which I'm told we don't need. And sure enough, it was not that simple. So when I started off on a successful high note, I was soon to be dashed down into pulling my hair out, trying to figure out why none of this was working, and led astray by the dream of not having to have no modules in there. Now, to be fair, there is a option when you are building a Next.js application that you can build it as standalone. So what that will do is that it will build the entire application, and then it will put into, well, when you build it to begin with, it creates a .next directory in the top level of the application source code. And in there, it puts in like all the compiled code for your application and for it to run. So it doesn't use your pages, and if you're using TypeScript, it doesn't have, you don't need the types. All that stuff that you have in your source, you essentially need what's in your .next directory and maybe a few other things like public and configure or whatever. It's public and static, right? But a lot of that could also just be in that .next. When you do standalone, it does a similar thing, but standalone inside that .next directory creates a standalone directory which has everything but public and static in there for that needs to run. So in that application, in that directory, you could just take that and run your, and it'll be your full Node application. You're good to go. If you copy in public and copy in static in there, you're completely good to go by just running the Node server.js in that standalone directory. And of course that sounded too good, because when I create the container based upon that, it went from a virtual size of 520 megs to like 37 megs as a virtual size for that container. It's an Alpine Node 20 container. And again, of course, it was too good to be true. Like, it mostly worked, but the big problem that we had is that when you're building a Node application in standalone, it will not allow you to use dynamic runtime configurations. So what that basically means is we enabled or used dynamic runtime configuration in that we can tell it by variables, environmental variables, like we say node env, node config env, and that's where we tell it whether it's development, staging, or production. And then it will read certain config files for that and use that. You can't use dynamic runtime configuration when in standalone mode. And especially you cannot use it for client side portion of the application. A node application, generally they're web-based applications, so there's a server-side component and there's a client-side. The client-side absolutely cannot use dynamic runtime configuration. There are certain things that you could do, but ultimately what has to happen is you got to rip out all that dynamic runtime configuration code, and you have to then also migrate over to, they used to have pages, and now instead of your stuff being in the pages, it has to be moved over into the app structure, and it's completely different than how we have it. So it's a hell of a lot more involved than we thought, or I thought, which was kind of unfortunate. So now we have to figure out whether or not we're going to pursue that avenue. But it challenging, Joel, to say the least. Challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun. I got to use a lot of different technologies. And do some scripting. And who doesn't love scripting, right?
Yeah. I don't mind it. Obviously.
Oh, you know what else I found out? And this really bums me out. Right, this was really annoying. So I wanted to build the container locally and test it that way because, like I said, we were having problems with it. Didn't seem like it was using the right environment. Stuff just was a little wonky. And, like, I couldn't run the container, like the build. I couldn't run the NPM install to get the libraries inside the container locally. It would start to build the container, and then when it would do the NPM install, it would just hang there. And it would totally lock up Docker, right? I couldn't go to another terminal and do, like, Docker images or Docker anything. Like, it would not let me use Docker at all. And it would just hang there. And eventually, after, like, 10 minutes, it would dump out and complain that it could not connect to, like, the remote repositories to pull down the library modules and stuff like that. And I started looking into this more, and there appears to be an issue with Rancher Desktop, because which is what we use. SUSE makes Rancher Desktop, and we use that because Docker Desktop went from being a free tool that you could use to, if you are in a company, you have to license it. Anyway, I was really bummed that, like, no matter what I would try to do, I could not get Rancher Desktop to run the Docker build to build that node application. And even more frustrating was, if I would try, it would totally destroy the Docker infrastructure on that system. Sometimes I could get it back if I would quit out of Rancher Desktop and bring it back up. Sometimes I would have to restart the whole machine to fix it. There were suggestions to go from using QEMU to VMLUZ, I think it is. So OS X's virtualization layer. But every time I would try and switch to the VMLZ or whatever it was, it would throw a Lima control error, and it would not let me get past that. So I was kind of bummed that I can't build for some reason. I don't know why it all of a sudden changed, but I can't build them anymore. A guy that I was working with, he was running an older version of Rancher Desktop and was able to replicate the problem I had with QEMU, but he switched to VN, the OS macOS one, virtualization, and he was able to get it to build and not have the same problems that I did. I was running 1.13, he was running 1.9, so I even dropped back to 1.9, and I still haven't been able to get it to go. Now, the next thing, I guess, if I really want to keep plugging away at this and trying to get Rancher Desktop to work properly, I may have to totally wipe out my Docker cache and probably do the full, like, complete nuke of Rancher Desktop and Kubernetes configurations and stuff like that. I'm not keen on doing that, but it might be the route I have to take to fix this problem so that I can try and use the OS X virtualization layer. But I don't even know if that's going to allow me to work. The other side is if I can convince them to license Docker Desktop, that opens up a whole new world of being back to a standardized tool that works for us in pretty much all the situations. But anyway, that I just wanted to throw that in. I'm kind of bummed about it, and I don't know if there's people have reported the bug, but it doesn't seem like anybody's fixing it. Nobody's fixing it, Joel.
Bummer.
Yeah. Anyway, your turn. Your turn to amaze. Yeah.
Well, as of, I am 3 pounds away from my next goal, which is to believe, actually 4 pounds, counting 300, but I want to be below 300 pounds as my next goal, so I'm just about there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I am. Did 5.35 miles hike last weekend. The weekend before was 4 miles in the muck. And both trails I did recently are on the natural trails, and my feet feel so different after doing that much miles on natural trails versus on asphalt. I hate walking on asphalt.
Oh yeah, it's hard on your feet.
Oh, but so doing well. I ordered another pair of trail runners that arrived today. Ultra Lone Peak 7, still the zero drop. Just different color, same size. So I'm going to start breaking those in just so I have a backup pair so that if I go slogging on a muddy trail, which there's tons of those around here right now. Thank you, April showers.
They're bringing the Mayflowers, Joel.
Supposedly, right? But the only thing I wish I could do is I wish I could go on a hike this weekend, but I am on the on call this weekend. Uh-oh. So
it'd be really, Joel?
It'd really, well, no, they wouldn't know as long as I don't get a page. It really sucked to be 3 miles into a 6 mile hike and have to
come back.
Well, like run back practically so I can get it taken care of,
yeah.
Especially if it's a real issue. Yeah, it's okay. I guess I probably could do basically the same trail I did last weekend, which was at the local metro park. So it's not like it's an hour away, or 30 or 40 minutes away, which is what like a Hargis Lake trail that I did couple weeks ago. That's a good 30-40 minute ride to the trailhead. So at least Scioto Grove Metro Park, which is like less than a mile from my house. So I just drive over there and probably start a little closer to the trailhead. I kind of parked in a different place last weekend, so I added probably a good half mile to my hike because of that, which is fine. Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. But so we'll see. I might do something like that just so that I can go, and at least then I would be as far away, you know. And I'm in cell phone range, you know. I at least could, I'd say probably 90% of the pages we get on a weekend are just those nuisance ones, you know, like, oh, hey, your test failed. You go in, you open it up on like an iPad or a phone or something and hit the button a couple times and it goes away. So, I mean, it is just because UI testing, which is how we're monitoring a lot of things, is not an accurate thing. It's basically a recording of a web session. So if that recording's off by a little bit, then it could fail. Or if there's like, say, a temporary issue on-prem, we have one user for some reason, the test will fail at the IDP layer, which is not something we control. It's saying the password's wrong, and then minutes later it corrects itself. So I don't know what happens on that, but at least it's easy enough to clear, make it go away. So I might do something like that, or at least go to the gym, because at least when I'm at the gym, I could extend my time there.
Right.
And then if I get a page, I can hop off the treadmill and do it and have the laptop in the locker. So, but we'll see. At the very least, I'm going to go to the gym probably. I got pretty much one more workout. I try and do 5 workouts a week, either trail hiking or treadmill or weights and treadmill or both, 5 days a week. And I've been doing that pretty good at that, getting that in there every week. So, then there's eating and trying new things, food wise. Just watching how much shit I shovel in my mouth. Basically, I mean, I'm still eating what I want to eat. You know, if I want to have pizza instead of eating a large pizza by myself, right, which I can do, I eat half of a personal pizza that I split with my son and add a sub to that as well, half of a sub. So half of a sub and half of a pizza, and I'm good. Little small pizza, 7-inch one.
I love pizza.
I do too. There's one thing I haven't tried yet. Have you ever tried cooking, baking your pizza on your cast iron fry pan?
In the oven?
In the oven, yeah.
The only thing I've done with that is Chicago style, which is not like a regular pizza. But no, right. I have a pizza stone, so I've used that. And now I have just the Oni, so I use that instead.
I need to get a pizza stone for my Pit Boss. I've done pizza in the Pit Boss, but usually frozen one right on the grids. So, which does work. Doesn't really, because at the temp you have to cook at, it doesn't really give it a lot of smoke flavor.
Oh yeah, when I use the I use charcoal and wood in the Oni. You don't get much smoke flavor on that because it cooks it so fast. There's really not much time.
Right.
Especially if you're getting it up to like 700-900 degrees. Yeah, you're not getting a lot of smoke on there to begin with. But it's still it has a little bit of that brick, like smoky brick oven kind of flavor to it.
Yep.
But still, yeah, you know.
It's a little different. Yeah, I mean, it's different, you know.
It tastes a hell of a lot better than most places that you buy a pizza from, though. That's for sure. When you make it yourself.
Of course it does, because you get to pick what you put on it.
And not just that. I mean, just the flavor of it, too. It's so delicious.
One thing I have been doing is I'll buy, like, some of that pre-made fajita meat, either the steak or the chicken, John Soul's brand, I think it is. And then I have some low-carb tortillas, and I'll heat up the cast iron and throw the tortilla in there with some. I cut up the fajita meat a little bit because it's almost too chunky for a quesadilla. So then I'll throw cheese and then some salsa and maybe some jalapenos or something. And then I'll flip over the tortilla and then cook it on both sides until it's kind of golden brown. And then I have a homemade quesadilla. And that's fairly, depending on how much crap you put in it, fairly healthy. Although I could cook the meat myself first in one of my other pans, and then that do that. So I'm experimenting with that. And then next time you're in, like, I know Walmart has it, and I think almost every store I've looked at lately has it. They some of the stores locally have started carrying some of the hot one sauces that they do on the Hot Ones YouTube channel. And one of my favorites is one of their very lowest heat level wise, which is their own buffalo sauce. And it is good. I mean, it is really good. I've gone through at least 6 bottles of it in the last couple months, probably. But I used to have to order it on like Amazon, but now that the stores carry it, I'll buy one almost every week because I love that stuff. I'll take that sauce and like for a snack today, I had baby carrots and just dipped it in that.
Okay.
So, but then I'll like have if you look, probably Walmart has them, but I know Sam's Club has them. I get Just Bear, either the chicken chunks or the chicken fingers, and they're technically pre-cooked. But I put them in the air fryer and they come out amazing. And then I'll dip it in either that sauce or I have some like Los Calientes, La Rojo, or the Verde. Some of those I've started to see at the stores too, the hotter ones. But they don't have like the Apollo X at the store because nobody's going to buy it because it's way too fucking hot.
But they should though.
I will say that one, I have tried it straight.
Okay.
It light your ass up. and your mouth.
I bet.
But I just haven't figured out, what could I put that on to, one, help enhance what I'm eating as well as help what I'm eating it on basically make it more tolerable. And I ain't quite figured that out yet. Maybe I might try it the next time I putting some in my chili the next time I have chili. That might work. I don't know. Cause it's got a really good flavor, but like, it's just like those twice hot nuclear noodles I sent you. You know, they tastes really good, but man, are they freaking hot. It's the same thing, man. it's not a hot sauce that has just pain, which there are plenty of those. But I need to teach myself how to make pho at home, too.
It's not that hard.
Oh, I know. It's not hard. I'm just going to find a recipe.
You just need to do the stock right. The beef stock.
Yep.
But it is so good. Delicious.
It's kind of the wrong kind of weather for right now too, anyway.
Yeah, I guess you could probably say that.
Just like chili, like I like to make chili, but it's not something you want to make when it's getting warm out.
Oh, you don't like a little hot chili? Deliciously hot chili.
I'm overdue for firing up the pellet grill. I've got some burgers in the freezer right now. I'll probably cook. Maybe as well do Sunday night for dinner.
I smoked some chicken quarters today. They were so good. Luckily, I have two left over.
I should probably try and get a chicken, and I have one of those beer can racks. I could do that in there. Although I wouldn't do beer, I'd probably do like root beer or something like that. Oh, and Liquid Death released a new flavor, man. Cherry obituary. Basically, cherry flavored sparkling water.
Is it cherry flavored or is it cherry hint of flavor?
It's cherry flavored, dude. That's why, like, Liquid Death is not like La Croix or whatever you want to call that stuff, where it has, like, it tastes like they waved the lemon over it.
It's in the same room as a lemon somewhere.
Right.
You can smell it, but you can't find it.
Right. Correct. Yeah, this is not like that at all. Yeah, I mean, you literally. The other flavors I've tried are like the one they call severed lime, which is basically lime. Same. It's, you can actually taste the flavor.
Uh-huh.
So, if you see it, like, if you just want to try it, pick one up at like Wawa, or Wawa should have them or something like that down there.
I've seen them all over the place. I just,
yeah,
I've been burned so many times by sparkling water. I hate it.
Yep. I drink the plain. Now, don't get the plain one, because every once in a while I'll get the plain one, because I'm one of those weirdos who can drink the plain one.
More power to you.
But the mango one I didn't care for, but that's just because mango tastes better, like if you have some like tahine with it or something. And apparently they brought out tahine sorbet, so like a mango and tahine and what's the other one? I don't know.
That
seems to, it's like a chili and lime salt kind of thing. T-A-J-I-N is how you spell
it. Oh, that stuff. Okay, yeah, we have some of that stuff here. I've used it. It's like reddish color.
It's that color. I put it on things like. Actually, it's really good on eggs, believe it or not. I liked it on eggs. Like some scrambled eggs or something, but but it's supposedly most of the people like they'll eat it, like sprinkle that on watermelon or something. But they're making a sorbet with it in it, and I've tried our Sam's Club carries gummy bears that have that on it too. It's kind of strange.
This thing is such a pain in the ass.
Yeah, he's still trying to fix a stapler, y'all. He's trying that on the pre-show.
Oh, I think I have it. That doesn't work. That looks like it's supposed to work, but it doesn't work. That's not what it's supposed to do. How does this thing stay in?
What I want to know is, how did you get a 747 swing line in pieces?
You'd have to ask the teacher across the hall from my wife, because he said I'll fix it for you and then give it back to her in pieces. So I'm like,
because see, I have the red swing line steeper because it doesn't bang as much from Office Space, because they do make that in a red, just like they had in a movie.
So, like, where I'm at on this thing is that I figured out the top part. What I'm trying to do is, so you know when you pull the stapler apart, there is a...
There's a blade on the top that pushes the staple down, right?
Well, there's a component. There's, like, there's the it's three parts. There is the bottom part. And then inside that is another metal part that has this slider where you put the staples line the staples up on, and then the slider pushes and gives tension, and there's a spring on the slider that goes into the top part, right? So I have no idea. Like, what I have is I have that middle piece with the slider, and then I have three springs.
Oh, that's how. Oh my gosh.
And like, I have three springs, and I'm like, I have no idea where two of these springs go. Now, I know the big long spring goes from, it hooks onto the sliding piece on the slider, and then in some way it goes, stretches around the top part and connects into the back of the top part. So I figured that out. And then I also figured out that, well, this top part has, there's a little hook inside that you need to push over top of this, the top part. And there's another spring. There's another spring in there that you need to have between the top part and the top of the stapler. Right. I figured that part out. Right. So I got that figured out. So I found out where two springs go. Now I have this third spring, which I think in some way is what holds this middle piece onto the bottom, but I haven't figured out how. And yeah, it's, and part of me thinks that this middle piece, there's two kind of like hooks on it. And there's two corresponding hooks on the other side. And it would almost seem like these hooks need to rest, like to connect, to hold this piece in there. But I don't see how that's possible to get it in. And all I want is, I would just love to see a picture of this thing, like, close enough that I can determine whether or not these hooks.
YouTube, man.
I've been looking on YouTube and I can't find anything in regards to this model. Like, something, I'm missing something here. And once I figure that part out, I should be golden. But here we are.
Yep.
Almost there. I don't want to give up. I don't want to fail my wife.
Never, never give up. Never surrender.
That's
you
it,
know
yeah.
what? You don't have to fail her. Just go to the store and buy her another one.
Yeah, just buy one the same color. It's like, wait, I thought mine was blue. No, it wasn't blue. It was orange. You don't remember?
It was orange. It was green.
I am so close. I just need, like, the one. I can see the spring. The spring that I'm looking at, like the spring that I am confused about, it looks, I think, I don't know, man. I don't see how this is the same model I am looking at.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the other day, I've tried a couple things on Taco Bell has that new Cantina line.
Oh yeah.
I tried the bowl the other day and it was delicious. The bowl and the quesadilla I tried, those are both pretty good. And some of the more healthy things they got in the menu. If you want to call Taco Bell healthy at all.
I like Taco Bell. You get a lot of good stuff.
Me too. Yeah, me too. The weekend before I do this hike, guess what we're probably going to be at?
Taco Bell?
No, the Ohio State Fair. Pigging out. So then I can lose it all the next weekend, right?
time for a dill dog?
I don't know if they have them there. I know they have them at Pumpkin Show. Honestly, though, I usually end up going the way the fair is they have what used to be called the 610 Marketplace because the radio station would sponsor it, where it was an air conditioned building, not far from where the concert venue is.
Uh-huh.
And there's like vendors in there, like Cutco will be in there selling knives. There'll be usually a stand selling like cinnamon almonds or something like that. And there's like a food court, and they have pretty much anything you could want. They have Chinese food and bubble tea. There's a pizza place in there, which, trust me, you don't want that pizza. It's nasty. You know, fair pizza is never good. I've never had good pizza at a fair, unless one exception, unless it's a local mom and pop joint that has a trailer that's set up at the fair. But you know, but some of the things like one stand has chicken and noodles and pierogies. Which I hardly ever get pierogies, but I love the heck out of those things.
Oh, I love pierogies.
I was from Western Pennsylvania. You know, that was the first area of the country I ever lived in. And let me tell you, the Pittsburgh area has pierogies galore. Any kind you want, from potatoes and cheese to potato and sauerkraut. All good stuff. There's a place in Columbus now called Pierogi Mountain. I've had their stuff, and it's pretty good. But again, it's so carbalicious, man. Ugh.
Delicious. Carbs, yes. Taste good. Fat is good. Carbs and fat.
Yeah.
Protein. With salt.
Protein. I tried I don't know if you've ever seen them, but there's a line of like protein pastries called Legendary. They also make like sweet rolls, which are like little honey buns almost.
Okay.
But they're like protein, you know, so they're lower carbs. All right. And I got some of those what they call the sweet roll, and those are pretty dang good. Expensive though, so I don't get them very often. But the same company makes like a protein Pop-Tart.
What happens with a protein Pop-Tart?
Oh, none. They're okay. I've never tried putting one of those in the toaster, though.
Okay. What would happen? Would it explode?
I'd probably be okay. Trying to find a link to their page. Yeah, they're high protein, low carb. So, like, they have blueberry, strawberry, hot fudge sundae. Brown sugar and cinnamon, a wild berry sweet roll, and I had the cinnamon sweet roll. I didn't heat them up. But along the same lines of, like, have you ever seen the Quest products in the store, like the Quest protein chips and stuff like that?
Okay.
But you ought to check into some of those. Those are pretty good, too. But. And nice to have something that's like a cookie, but that's not completely awful for me and my blood sugar. That's been under the control. I'm kind of excited to go see what my labs are even now. I mean, I had labs back in March, right before I went to the nephrology, although they didn't do the full panel. Like, they didn't do the A1C and stuff like that.
Okay.
But they did. I mean, they did said basically, if I make it a year, and it's still normal next year, then I don't need to see him anymore.
That's cool.
Of course, then I'm wondering, though, too, is if because he's got me on spironolactone, and I'm wondering if I need to continue that, because that has some benefits beyond that. It helps with the blood pressure, too.
Okay.
That's been pretty normal, too, lately. I measure my blood sugar and my blood pressure every morning.
That's cool.
And I've had probably been right around 100 to 90% the last couple of weeks of them being in range. Like one day this week it was like 107 in the morning, which is pretty decent.
That is awesome. Congratulations. Joel.
Yes, sir.
I have this thing almost completely together. The problem is I have one spring, and I have no idea where this goes. I have no freaking idea where this spring goes. I'm looking at a picture, and I see the spring.
Is the foot still attached?
The foot? What do you mean the foot?
Yeah, the foot of the foot of the stapler.
Yeah,
is it
still
attached to the base?
The little it's silver thing
that the staples go into.
Yeah, it's maybe I need to look at this 878 assembly. Right? The 878 is similar to this. And so annoying.
I don't know, man. What I do know is I think we should call it quits because it's past 10 o'clock now, man.
Holy crap.
We started late, though, so.
Yeah, I guess we better wrap it up.
Yeah, don't know where all the other folks were. I was at church, so my apologies on being late. But
say what? I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said I was at church. So. But, yeah, hopefully Joe's doing okay. To give everyone an update on, I don't know if we ever talked about Link, but he's out of the hospital and he's at home. Just keep him in your prayers, folks. He could use them.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, all right. I'm gonna load us up here. Play us out. Thank you, everybody. This is the first show for May.
It's gonna be May.
Oh, Link's gonna do better. I hope. I hope that Dave's daughter is doing well from her surgery. And that's it. We will see you in a week. Here are your promos, or your promo and your outros. Here we go. So long.
I am short.
Oh my God! It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy,
it's over.
Yeah.
You were making it pretty young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Rawr.
I am going to miss my boot camp tomorrow, but that's all right. It's a good reason.
Your what tomorrow?
I do this fitness boot camp with a group of people from church. And we're canceling it because one of our former pastors who one of the coaches of the group, it's her brother. She is going to attend that. We're going to go and support because he used to pastor our church. He came over after the second merger that we did in the last few years. So we're going to go support him. He's getting ordained at the Grove City Nazarene Church here. So I'll probably go over to that tomorrow.
That's excellent.
And be on call at the same time. But I'll still go. And so instead, I'll just do my workout in the morning like I usually do, which should really be the last one I have to do this week. But I might do one on Saturday too. Especially since the weather this week is going to be crappy anyway, so it's probably not going to be good hiking weather. It's going to be rainy. But one of my biggest goals is that I want to get my BMI down to 40, which is still obese, but if I can do that, then I can possibly be a good candidate for the Inspire sleep apnea therapy, which is you get an implant in your chest, and they route wires up into the area that would close when you have an apnea, and it detects when that happens and then gives it a gentle shock that you can't feel. All right. And how it basically works is before you go to bed, you hold this device over where the implant's at to turn it on. And then you go to sleep normal, and then with no mask, no hose, no machine. And then in the morning, you just do the same thing, but you turn it off. So if I can do that, if I can get to that, that I can do one of ultimately, I'd love to be able to do a through hike of the Appalachian Trail, possibly when I retire, because it's like a six month commitment. At the very minimum, though, I want to be able to do some overnight backpacking, because I've always wanted to do that, never got to. So if I can do that, then I can probably possibly do that, because right now carrying that CPAP and then whatever you stop to do your overnight, if it doesn't have any electric, you're kind of screwed. And you can't sleep. So that's ultimately would be my next goal after I get the down below 3, which I should hopefully be able to do that here in a few weeks. So we'll see you next week, man.
All right, take it easy.
Good luck on staple repair.
Yeah, thanks. I'll talk to you in a bit.
I'm wearing shorts right now that are 2 sizes smaller than they were last year.
Oh, that's great. Good for you, sir.
I'm getting the recording on.
Sounds Murph can come on.
Hell with Murph. I'm sick and tired of Murph telling me.
Yeah, Murph's always welcome.
No, Dave said he's not going to be on tonight.
Ah.
Ah, her daughter, his daughter had a gallbladder out. Holy mackerel. My wife.
What'd she do?
Comes home with a swing line stapler that she just got like last week. And she's like, fix it. And I'm like,
broken already?
Well, yeah. So I don't know what happened What is this? I don't know what happened, but something happened with it, and like the teacher across the hall said I could fix it, and took it apart, and then handed it back to her.
Number one.
Handed it back to her in pieces and said, I can't fix it. And so she brought it home. And like, I'm like, I have no idea how this thing goes together. I have this bar with a sliding piece, and I have three springs. And not a single video shows me how to fix this model. Like, I can't get
is
a good.
Is it the red picture. Swing line stapler?
No, it's a 7-4. It's a 747, and like I have an idea of how it goes together, but I'm like, I can't tell if it's missing some pieces, or whether I'm just not like putting it in the right way. I think I'm putting it in the right way. I think I see what needs to happen. I just don't know how to get it on there. Like, it is... Oh, my goodness. I have no freaking clue. Like, it almost feels like this should go underneath here. Like I'm saying it should go underneath here to you, and you have no idea what I'm looking at. And it could possibly be that the thing I think is the front is actually the... No, this has got to be... Ah, jeez. This is the part that slides up. The staples go on top of this thing. But this thing looks like it needs to hook... Why can't they just show schematics for these things? If I could see where every piece goes, then I would be good.
Yeah.
Like, I just want a Slingline 747 diagram, schematic, anything. I don't want an unboxing. The closest I can get is like an unboxing. And every time this person unboxes, like I see something, I just like... Show me the inside. Just show me the inside. And no. Do I have it upside down?
It sounds like a hardware issue.
Yeah.
You know what you do?
Buy a new one.
Exactly.
Yeah, no kidding. But she just bought this like last week or something.
Can return it.
Change pieces.
Well, yeah, there's a problem there, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, it shouldn't be this hard if I could only get like something that would just show me. Show me what it looks like from the inside. Like everything I am looking at. Oh, how does that come together?
Got no clue.
Yeah, okay, so now... Oh, this doesn't even look like the one I'm working on. Why do these things not look like the way I expect them to look?
Link is not doing the greatest.
He went home, though, didn't he?
Yeah, he's home.
I got an email. He told me he was home, and I guess so.
He's on hemodialysis versus the peritoneal one, but he has to give it to himself like 4 hours a day. So needless to say, he's probably not working.
Oh, for 4 hours? That's insane.
Yeah.
That's a lot, man. Holy mackerel.
Sure is.
But I mean,
in some ways, his thing is basically scared. Is part of what triggered me to get my act together.
Yeah.
Although I ate Wendy's tonight and it was good. Had chicken sandwich. I didn't get like a burger.
A delicious chicken sandwich. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'll do it.
Honest to goodness. I guess we should start the show.
Yeah.
You got what?
I basically got the same trail runners I already had, but I wanted to have like a backup pair, you know, in case I come home from a hike when they're slogged and covered in mud, you know?
Yeah.
So then that way that I wouldn't have to miss a workout the next day because they're sopping wet because they scrubbed them in the sink. My cat's over here poking his head out the curtains. Luke is out dashing.
Dashing and making the monies.
He's got a class twice a week on his automotive repair class. He can get a job. He can get a job from that. Like I told him that he would be perfect for it because you don't really have to talk to people as much as you would if you were going into management.
Oh, that's true.
Ultra Link 7s. Amazon had them. When I first looked at these trail runners, they were like $90. They're like the previous model. And they reduced them. Some of them are like right around 84. These ones were 86. Probably because they're... I don't know if they're more popular or not. They're teal with purple soles. They look really cool. Even if it makes my toes look like Fred Flintstone feet almost. I've been debating looking at some of the Huaraches style kind of things.
Right.
Just because I wouldn't mind trying to hike in something like that just to see how it would feel.
You'll feel everything under your feet.
Every fucking stone, yeah.
which is what I think
I don't want to do because a lot of the trails around here has a lot of gravel on it and tree roots and yeah.
I mean,
I don't think I could do that.
I did it for years and you just got to be careful because it's just like stepping on it with bare feet.
Right.
It doesn't feel good. Doesn't feel good.
And it wouldn't be too amazing in the mud either.
What the hell? Okay, so this has gotta go around this piece. Right? Which means if this goes like this, yeah, that okay, I think I got this part. And then this, but I don't, how am I going to get this thing to stay down?
Start the show, man. It's going to be short anyway.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Son of a bastard. Oh. All right. All right, let's...
What the heck show are we on?
1050.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, I should have had all this all ready to go, but I didn't. Let's see.
Wait. I was just thinking of something. Have you talked to Link at all about maybe possibly working on maybe transferring the domain and the server to us? Or
I did not do it. I did not yet.
Yeah. Not that I'm wishing for the guy to die or nothing, but yeah.
No, I hear you. Yeah, no. I mean, I have access to all that stuff, but I have the domain, I think. Don't I? Yeah.
Oh, do you own it?
I think I, yeah.
So I think Link was paying for the hosting, if I remember right.
Yeah, he was on Bluehost. Yeah, it was, I think, I'll have to double check. All right. 1050, let's start the show. 5, 4, 3, 2, wait, am I recording? Yeah, I am. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And
what it's happened? The best show here, tech show. No.
Wait, what happened? Is this not? I had this all working just fine. Is it? Where does it go? Like, why does it just stop working? Why? Okay, let's do this. Why does this? Oh God, this laptop! I gotta switch this laptop out. This thing is too much. It's killing me. You know what? Let me restart this. I don't even know why I'm recording on this one anyway. This laptop's got to go. I got to cycle in a different one. This one's too old. This one's too old, Joel. Okay. Now, let's bring it back. Oh. Trackpad is a pain in the ass. Now, is this doing it? Yeah, there we go. All right.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.